Hi, I'm Oki, and welcome to Tell Me About Your Book. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Tell Me About Your Book. I get to talk to author Louise Carnahan today about her amazing book that I've been really looking into and really obsessing with lately. It's called Work Jerks, but I want Louise to talk more about it than me just rambling on. So, hi, how are you today?
Hi, how are you, Oki?
I'm good, thank you. Before we get into your book, can you tell me where you are?
Yes, I'm in West Lynn, Oregon, which is just outside of Portland.
Nice. Oregon seems such opposite from where I am. I'm in Houston, Texas, and we get a lot of nature. There's a lot of trees and beautiful parks, but comparing to Oregon, it's a whole another world to me.
Oh, you've had some weather. Yeah, I feel
for you. Oh, gosh. It's just hot. That's all we are here is it's hot. Hot and hotter. But let's get into your book, Louise. Can you go ahead and give me everything there is to know about your book.
Well, I'll try. It's called Work Jerks, How to Cope with Difficult Bosses and Colleagues. And when people ask me what's it about, I say, well, you know, the title kind of says it all. Right. So what this book is, it's a compilation of about 40 years worth of stories I have of working in organization development, primarily specializing in interpersonal relationships, teamwork, leadership skills. And out of those years, I found some trends about how people interact with each other. You know, one of the things I say is if people had behaved well at work, I really wouldn't have had a career. I was able to carve out a career from the quirks people have. And I find people fascinating. So over these years, I've come up with 9 jerkotypes, I call them.
Oh, interesting. So
they're jerk archetypes. Underneath those are subcategories. So just to give you a flavor of some of them, which you probably will be able to put names to.
I'm sure.
Yes. And I'm sure your listeners will as well. The narcissist.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
The know-it-all.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. The incompetent.
Oh, yeah. And those are the ones that we always wonder, how did you get to this position again? How did this happen?
Yeah. And there are different flavors of the incompetent. And some of them you really feel pretty sorry for because they got left behind, you know.
Right.
As
I like how you use the word flavors.
We've got, you know, the poor me, the person who's always victimized, the jokester, you know, whose humor just does not work. I've got a whole bunch of things underneath the habitually annoying jerk, which is lots of little irritations. You know, there's sort of a spectrum, if you think about it, of the jerks. And I would say narcissists are the hardest to deal with, specifically the narcissistic leader. Because those people can really tank your career. Right. If they decide that they've got it out for you, it becomes very, very difficult. And it's the kind of the unsuspecting who gets lured into what I would call their den, you know, their inner sanctum where they make you feel special. But there's always payment for that. Mm-hmm. And if you get to a point where you've displeased them, they'll kick you to the curb. And depending on how malicious they are, they can do a lot of damage along the way to you. So it's the wise person who pays attention to that situation and kind of stays on the fringe of it so that you're a little more nimble and not stuck if they have a change of heart. And then there are the people who are just annoying. It's not like it's going to end your job. You're not going to leave it over this, but it's things like, oh, I don't know, making a tuna melt in the break room where it just stinks, you know, and everybody's got to deal with the stink. Or the person who just habitually interrupts you. the person who just thinks, oh, everybody's exactly the same and assumes all sorts of things and has plenty of advice that is unwanted. And then there are the people, it's a little more serious, who take credit where there is none due, you know, and
that does happen.
Yeah. Well, it happens. I hopefully not a lot, but it can have very serious consequences. Mm-hmm. And there's some professions, of course, that have very strict regulations around lifting other people's work.
Right.
But I would say more people than not are a little more casual about how they'll use other people's work and pass it off as their own. So there's all sorts of stuff in the book. I will say that the one thing that occurred to me after writing it, I vetted it with about 30 different people that I had read it from different job categories and different ages and, you know, everything demographically different I could think of to get a sense of what was missing or what needed to change or what needed to be expanded. And one of the things I came away with as a result of a conversation with my cousin, who couldn't find her jerk in the book, which is possible, you know, that you won't find your jerk, is sometimes it's not an individual. It's the whole culture stinks.
You're right. Yeah. You have to kind of almost back up a little by little to see a bigger pool, I guess, because we all deal with our own individual bosses. Right. And then sometimes you're right. You got to step back even more, like it's just a bigger picture and so forth.
That's right. If it's a one-off, it's one person, and particularly if they're a colleague and there are ways to work around them, it's not that big a deal. Mm-hmm. If it's your boss, it's a little harder because you got to deal with them. If it's the entire organization or the entire department, that puts you in a pretty difficult position.
Absolutely,
in terms of some decisions you need to make about whether you can actually stay.
Right. That kind of catapults. Instead of dealing with a boss, it's more like, let's look inward and is this where I belong kind of thing. So
that's exactly right, Oki. That's a great way of putting it. It really does take some soul searching about how much am I willing to trade in terms of my integrity or my sanity or my health to be in this job. And I know that in some communities, there aren't a lot of options. Mm-hmm. And that makes it even more difficult to figure out, well, how am I going to make a living without compromising myself to the degree that...
Compromising your mentality, everything, your will to walk into the door sometimes.
Exactly right.
I'm so fascinated by this book because I feel like anybody can relate to a lot of things that you're saying. As serious as these observations are, I feel like there's a lot of humor in it as well and a lot of wit. And I don't know. I have to admit, though, I have been a boss for a long time. I've been a manager for a long time. I've owned my own business. So I'm kind of curious when I read it, how I would approach this. You know, I mean, of course, I have bosses now and things like that. But being in that role at one point, it's kind of curious. So, Louise, what made you begin on a book like this? How did this catapult to now a complete product?
Well, thank you first for your thoughts about the book. And I'm glad you found the humor in it because, I mean, really, some of these situations are very funny. If you're not in the middle of them, they're pretty darn funny to listen to. And they start to remind you of grade school or, you know,
right.
The cafeteria in junior high. I mean, some of the things that happen between people are kind of laughable. And yet, for the person who's going through them, they're pretty serious. And so I never want to diminish the impact to the person. But if we can find some levity in there, it's helpful. You know, we've all, as you say, we've all dealt with this kind of stuff. And it doesn't even have to be at work. You know, one of the things I say to people who are retired is they say, oh, I wish I'd had this book, you know, 30 years ago. Oh. And it's like, yeah, well, do you volunteer anywhere? Are you on a board? Right. How about the homeowners association?
Oh, man. Oh, my.
You know, because people are people are people. and we're all in families. I decided I would write the workbook, not the life version, because although I trained as a therapist, I never practiced as one. I went into my career pretty early on in the workplace. That's where I found my passion, is working with people at work. And I love systems and teams. That's what kind of pushed me in that direction. And then I got all this opportunity to work in organizations that it was the luxury, really, to be hired someplace that valued having training and coaching available for their employees, because not a lot of places do. I mean, percentage-wise, I don't know what the percentage would be, but I'm guessing it's under 50%. And when you ask, why did I decide to write the book? It was because my clients would say to me, gee, you know, I wish my spouse had this opportunity, or I wish my parent or my best friend or somebody who was dealing with an issue at work had somebody to talk to. I'm practical. You know, I like really down to earth, what's going to actually work stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm interested in the philosophy and I'm interested in the why and the analysis. I find that fascinating to think about. But when it comes right down to it, people didn't come into my office to talk about, gee, why did this person end up this way? They came in to say, how do I deal with them?
What do I do?
What do I do? And I worked with smart people. If they'd known what to do, they would have done it. And so, you know, my philosophy was, I'm here to open the door to options and have them look at what might work for them, because everybody's situation is slightly different. And although, you know, when I was working in organizations as an internal consultant, as opposed to being an external consultant, and I've done both over the course of my career, when I was inside the organization, I certainly had a better sense of the culture and a better sense of the players involved, who they were dealing with. So I could probably in some ways be more accurate in my guesses of what might work. But in the end, it's the person who has to get the words out of their mouth.
Right. Has the confidence to approach the boss or to, you know, a lot of people are very non-confrontational. So a book like this kind of helps them weed out like what works for them and what won't work for them. So this is brilliant.
Well, thank you for that. I hope to give people a lot of options to choose from and use their best judgment. It's going to be a little push to do something that you haven't done before. If you're by nature not particularly assertive, that it's really hard for you to say to somebody, gee, I need to talk to you about a situation that's bothering you.
Or simply saying no to something.
You know? Or saying no without feeling like the earth is going to open and swallow you. That's a stretch for somebody. If they do nothing, well, they've probably done nothing and seen the results of that. So this is an opportunity to try something different. I tell my clients, look at everything as an experiment. Just try it.
I love that.
Yeah. You're not committed. You can back out of it. You don't have to do it again. But maybe things could get better. I really believe that small tweaks can make a big difference.
Right.
And of course, it's the other person you can't change. You can change you.
You're the only person. Your own mentality. So how can it benefit you navigating through your work days and things like that? So how was it writing this book? How was this journey?
I have to tell you, it was kind of fun. It's terrible, isn't it? Because most writers will say, oh, it was so much work. I actually liked writing. I had a really good time writing because I was writing stories. You know, in the end, I'm a storyteller. That's what I would use in the classroom. I think people learn better when they're reading stories, when they're listening to stories, because we can all relate. Engaging people on that level, which is engaging them not just intellectually, but emotionally, tends to work better. It's more entertaining and there's a nugget in there. So I had a good time going back through it. Of course, like any writer, there are things you have to throw out that just didn't fit. There were things I changed where I would struggle. I'd get feedback. I'm in a writer's group. That was super helpful. I'm in a critique group. And that's exactly what they do. They critique. So there were times that, you know, some favorite phrase of mine would just have to end up on the cutting room floor because wasn't clear enough. Or there was something just that didn't resonate for other people. So there's that process, but it's not a bad process. And I enjoyed doing it, but I did get stuck at one point. You've probably heard about others talk about kind of a slump or a writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mine came about 2/3 of the way through the book. I had surgery, so I knew I would be out for about a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, but once you stop the momentum,
it's just kind of hard to get back on a horse kind of thing.
It really kind of was. I relied on old tricks from high school. I put myself in study hall. I went to the library and I wrote.
I love that though.
It was the perfect place to go. Just get out of the environment I'd been in. I went to the library, beautiful reading room. Just really nice with just the right amount of noise without too much noise, you know, so you don't feel completely isolated. I made myself write 2 hours a day. And, you know, if you keep at it, you'll finish a book.
You have to treat it like a job, pretty much.
I did. Yeah, I thought, well, I'm either going to finish this or I'm not. And it'd be a pity after all this time not to just get it done. So I did.
This book is necessary to me. This is an important book. People don't realize how, you know, you go home or you go to your friends who vent about your boss, things like that. It's great. But at the end of the day, now what do I do about it? So I'm glad you finished. I'm glad we're here at this point.
Thank you. Well, you know, venting with friends works to a point, but it doesn't seem to be satisfying enough.
Right. It doesn't give you, now what do I do kind of thing. You know, it's great for someone to listen to your anguish. But then the next day, what do I do? So I totally get the importance of a book like this.
Well, and at some point, talking about how miserable you feel just makes it worse to go to work.
Right. Yeah. Especially if it's a daily thing and you think about it all the time, it's almost poison in your mind. So we need to find a solution, like the medicine to this. And this is where your book comes in.
Thanks for that, Oki. One of the things that, you know, I'll give a little tip that I use myself and I give it to clients that is so doable is when you get into that rut where you just keep thinking about it and you can't stop, or it's waking you up in the night, you know, that kind of thing. That's when you've really hit a place where you need to do something different. It's really taking too much real estate in your brain. You don't want that to be happening. And I call it a neural rut. You know, you've gotten your brain into a neural rut where you just keep going through the same loop over and over again.
So here's
a real simple brain hack. And that is, if it's daytime anyway, and you can look around, look for the color red in your environment. It's just a distraction. That's all it is get your mind off of it. There's nothing particular about the color red. It's just more difficult to find red than green in Oregon. We see green everywhere. But, you know, any color would do, or any object would do. If you're driving and it's safe to look around, you could look for a certain kind of car or anything that just gets you off of that
like
subject.
A distraction, right?
It's a distraction. That's all it is. Is a distraction.
That's a great example. I love that.
Yeah. And then it buys you some time because you can't do much creative thinking when you're stuck in that loop.
So Louise, what are some next projects for you now that you have work jerks on the table there? What are some things?
Well, the first thing this year was I did the audiobook.
Oh, nice.
So that was fun. You know, I'm still doing a little bit of consulting work and my clients don't have time to read. So they get a lot of their information, especially leadership training, from audiobooks or podcasts. So I recorded Work Jerks and I had a lot of fun doing it. I did it myself because I knew that not everybody would get the humor. and I was afraid that somebody might read it and really, you know, not see where the funny parts are. And I did do training as an actor. So I felt like, you know, I'm going to try this and see how it works. I had a blast doing it. It was really fun.
Great. Uh-huh.
So that dropped June 1st. And, you know, it's available pretty widely. So I've just started working on a new project. And that project, I'm not going to say a ton about because I don't want to leak out the air from the balloon before it gets But it's another book about work. And this one is really more aimed at leaders. Work Jerks was aimed for anybody who goes to work. Although I think in terms of audience, probably the people who pick it up are probably often in management roles or supervisory roles, or they're looking very specifically for help because they've been having problems. I would say there are other good books out there on dealing with difficult people. I think there's no end to the need. So one more book is fine. You find the one that speaks to you, written in language you like, that interests you, that has the content you're looking for. And I have certainly referred people to some other books that I think are quite good, especially around giving feedback, which seems to be everybody's biggest challenge.
Okay. Well, thank you for all this. I think this is a nice change of pace for me, at least, to shift to something like this. I think your work is fascinating. And it's something that people think they already know. It seems to be something natural to them. Like, oh, why don't you just say something to your boss or this and that? But people don't realize how difficult it is to really be, you know, to really open up or to give out a concern to their own boss. It's actually a really difficult thing to do, you know, and we wish we all know how to do it and what to do. So this is great. So Louise, where can we get your book?
Well, it's pretty widely available. So it's traditionally distributed. I always like to prompt people to go to their independent bookstore because that's great. Help support your local indie. And they can order it if it's not on the shelf. And then, of course, it's available online.
And you have a really pretty cool website about your work. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, thank you for that. It's louisecarnahan.com. And my name is spelled really funny. It looks like Carnahan. So anybody who's listening might want to look at the notes from this podcast to see how it's spelled. But I've got a work advice blog that I put up there. That's also distributed through Facebook, L.A. Carnahan. It's my author page. And I'm also on LinkedIn and Instagram. So it can, you know, the blog is pretty widely available to be seen. And I kind of tackle some of the issues that are in Work Jerks, but I also kind of expand beyond that into things that I've been thinking about that I think appeal to others when they're thinking about interacting with people, you know, some of the situations that come up. The one that just dropped this week had to do with preconceptions people have about you, just based on the most superficial data. My example to start with was going in to buy a car. The assumptions that were made about me because of how I look. You know, I got sized up as an older woman and I was there by myself, you know, no man with me. And I think I looked like chum. Well, what they didn't know, because they didn't ask for my resume, I taught negotiation skills for about 15 years for the state of Washington. And they didn't know who they were dealing with. So in the end, I got exactly what I wanted. But will I go back there to buy again? No. It didn't feel good.
Yeah. And I was just telling one of my friends the other day, I was like, it's so strange, even in 2023, the fact that I'm a woman, it's still, you can't do this. You don't know how to, it's what? Right. Anyway, okay. Sorry, we don't have a lot of time left. Let me kind of end it because I feel like I can talk to you for a while. But thank you, Louise, for coming by today and talking to me about something that everybody can relate to, giving us advice on something like this and pointing out important factors in the workplace. Any last minute thing you want to say before we go today?
I think I want to give people some encouragement that if they're in a lousy situation, it can get better. You know, it can. I have seen people turn around their situations. I've turned around my own situations. You know, I feel like that ad, you know, I'm a client too, because I've worked in situations that haven't been pleasant. Mm-hmm. I've worked with people I didn't like, doing jobs I didn't like, and I needed the paycheck. I assume that the people who are looking at my book need to keep working. That's why they're trying to make something change for the better for themselves. And I believe it can happen. I am an internal optimist about that. And then I will also say, and if you've tried and you can't get it to happen, you need to make another choice, because nothing is worth feeling lousy every single day when you go to work. You want to go to work feeling inspired, excited to do the work. Almost everybody I talk to tells me they like their job. That's not the problem. Mm-hmm. It's the conditions that are the problem. So gotcha. I believe things can change. I am so glad you invited me to come, Oki. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been so much fun to talk with you.
Yeah, same to you. This is fascinating stuff to me. I've always been really attracted to read about human behavior in any way or form. So this is right up my alley. But I do want to make one last comment. I would love for you to write a book like this, but dealing with family as far as workplace, because I had a family restaurant and I grew up in the business. And when I opened my own, but had my family, and that was a whole different challenge in a workplace. So
we need that. For a family restaurant, Oki. I know there is actually Man. A section in work. About oh. It's called We Are Family is the title of the chapter.
And
it's
about more than a chapter, Louise. I feel like
you could write the book, Oki. You should collaborate.
Maybe collaborate, yes. But I'm going to let you go because we are running out of time. Thank you so much for today. And I hope you come back to talk to me. And when you get your next book going, or you expand the chapter about family, because I feel like a lot of people can definitely relate to that. But have a good day today. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Tell Me About Your Book. Please continue to support indie authors and indie bookstores. And if you would love to support Tell Me About Your Book podcast, you can certainly do so by going to buymeacoffee.com/tellmepodcast. For a price of a coffee, you can support monthly for just $5. There's other tiers too in the memberships, and you can look at all the info about it, and I would certainly, certainly appreciate it. And of course, there's the other podcast, Books, Cats, and Snacks, where Katty and I talk all things book and about her cats too. See you then.